and welcome to another episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. I'm your host, Adam L. Machias, tuning in all the way from Los Angeles, California, for episode number 78 with my good friend, Mike Finn. Now, thank you so much for joining me this week, Mike. Mike is a tour manager who's been in the game for a while now, He's been touring for a while now. I met him a long time ago, and going over his touring history with him was really interesting because I didn't realize how much interaction I had with him prior to when we really kind of became associated or like knew each other. So it was really cool. And I usually take notes on all the quotes I get from people on each podcast episode. And Mike had a lot because I try to dissect them and then use them for the book. And the way he speaks of the music industry, I really enjoyed it. He has a very like romanticizes it is kind of what I would say. You know, he talks about building a city inside a venue or just, I don't know these terms, and I really liked it. So Mike, I loved hearing how passionate you are about touring the music industry. And yeah, we talked about touring in country, which is something that we haven't had on here before. And so I wanted to understand what it was like. What's a weekend warrior? Why do you need to live in Nashville? Or why did you used to live in Nashville? So I asked him those questions so I could get the answers to them. So thank you, Mike, so much for joining me this week. And as always, thank you to our patrons. Man, we got two new patrons. Drew and, oh my God, Sulidus? I don't know how to say your name, but cool name. Drew, actually, I probably already gave you a shout out, but I'll give it to you again. Thank you so much to our new patrons and, of course, to all of our existing patrons for their weekly contributions that support the podcast. Let me keep doing this. And I'll tell you, I'm working with a creative. Her name's Olivia. Check her out if you get a chance. She's on tour with the Lumineers. And she told me that somebody named Whitney is on tour with her. And listens to the podcast. So I just want to give it a shout out to Whitney. Thank you for listening, spreading the good word, and hopefully treating my friend Olivia very nicely on the road. I look forward to coming and visiting you guys on this tour. It looks amazing through Olivia's eyes. Keep crushing it. All right. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. I'll see you next week. Hey, Mike, how's it going? Welcome to the podcast.
Adam, long time.
Has been a while. I actually was I was trying to think the last time I saw you. Do you know it?
I think downtown San Diego for tacos one night.
And that was it.
Bird scooters. I think Tom was there, right?
Yeah, it was you, Tom, Dylan, and we went to a place downtown for tacos. And I can't believe it's been that long.
I think it has been. I don't know.
We might have crossed paths somewhere. But that was the last time where like we were together and doing an activity on purpose together.
Yeah, yeah.
Man. Because, I mean, how long has it been since you've even worked for him?
For Dylan, my last show was Coachella of 2019.
Oh, so not that long, actually.
No, we just hit the 3-year mark.
Two of them are COVID, so it's kind of like 1 year ago.
Yeah, year and a half.
That's great. Well, I mean, how have you been doing?
Good, man. Things are good. I've been working in country music since, so COVID didn't really exist in country music for a long time. So we got started a little bit earlier than some other genres. but yeah, it's been fun. I've been living in Nashville for 8 years now. So it's kind of like been good. I don't know. I like the South living in Nashville. I like living in Nashville.
If people, I feel like if people live in Nashville long enough, you eventually just start working for country.
I feel like you should because you're, I don't know. You're home a lot more, and that's what I appreciate, you know?
Yeah, I was excited. Sorry, keep going.
No. That's really it. And once I'm sure when the time calls, I'll go back to standard touring, but it's really nice once you get used to weekend warrior, like real weekend warrior touring, you're home a lot, and it's like you don't have to throw out your groceries every time you leave the house, you know?
That is a good thing. That is good for the wallet. I mean, the reason I was excited to have you on is one thing to get somebody who tours in country. It's another thing to get somebody who's toured with a DJ, also toured with bands. He comes from the same world I do. And you kind of have that same reference point of like, this is how it's different. And I think it'll be helpful for the listeners to like, you know, you have a very good variety of touring you've done.
Yeah, I think it was, I've always wanted to get a taste of most genres. There's a few genres that like I've heard some horror stories on and like certain artists that I'm like, I don't need to work with those. But like, as a whole, I think each of them have played an imperative part to another. Like there's certain things that I've taken from, you know, the hardcore and punk bands that I started with to the Warped Tour, you know, pop punk bands into the pop rock bands, into the pop stars, into the DJs, into, you know, now country stars. Ooh. You know,
would it be too long for him to walk through those with me? Because I'm actually very interested. I mean, if I was going by my notes, this would be later down, but it came up organically. So I feel like we could just go into it if that's okay with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like my history.
Yeah. I mean, I met you through Mayday Parade. I didn't realize that you started before that with hardcore music, you said?
Yeah. 2008, late 2007, I went on tour with my college roommate. And I came up in the Boston punk and hardcore scene.
Oh, wow.
So we got 13 guys, all friends, in the van and drove out to Ohio and back from Massachusetts. And that was my first official tour. It was a band called The Carrier and this band called Energy. And I just sold t-shirts and, you know, stole food from grocery stores and was vegan at the time. And I don't know, I probably had long hair. Yeah, I definitely had long hair at the time. And yeah, it was my first taste of touring, even though prior to that, when I was in high school, I would go to shows every weekend with local bands. And so I would say the first band I was in was probably sophomore year of high school, but that was just
that's awesome.
Friends going to do shows up in New Hampshire or Maine or just different parts of Massachusetts.
Were you at, you say Boston hardcore. If you haven't listened to hardcore music, that's pretty were there some violent shows? I feel those are some violent shows.
No comment. But I was the young generation in my opinion. And yeah, it's crazy to think that I'm pretty disconnected or I'm just not involved in it because I have friends for life from it, but I don't know any of the new generation of Massachusetts hardcore. And that's pretty wild because that was such a big part of my life for a decade, if not long. I mean, really since I was in seventh grade, but yeah, I don't know. It's pretty, I was just talking with, I met a guy randomly, quick side tangent. He works for CrossFit HQ and he runs seminars teaching people how to be CrossFit coaches.
Oh, cool.
He came up in the Philly punk scene and he's in his 50s now. He came up with Bad Brains and Ramones and stuff like that. And he and I were talking about mutual friends that we have. And it was just a complete stranger. And we ended up having so many mutual friends, mutual stories. It was really cool. And that's what I still kind of love about it. Cause he's a couple of generations above me, but a lot of people he is friends with kind of took me under their wings and I became very friends with, and they were my elders, but yeah, it was cool. It definitely taught the community having your own community, you know?
Yeah. That's great.
But it was mayhem for a while. I don't know.
So, I mean, you went from that to, did you go right from that to kind of, they're very connected in a way. You went from that to Warped Tour, and maybe not Mayday Parade specifically, but
No, I went from Carrier to this band called Our Last Night from New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah, and I know those guys.
And the drummer Tim is one of my best friends and has been one of my best friends for my pretty much since high school. We met on MySpace, and he was just like, "Hey, we just got an agent. We just signed to Epitaph Records. Would you come tour with us?" And I was like, "Sure," you know. So I went out on the summer tour. Yeah, that carried on for over a year and a half, ended up dropping out of college. Then that's on one of the tours I met Versa Emerge.
Oh man.
That, so 2009 was Versa Emerge Warped Tour. 2010 was Versa Emerge. And then I quit for Owl City, went out with Owl City for a while. And then Mayday Parade after that. Yeah.
I really had just the bullet points. I didn't even know all the things. And now that you're saying Versa Emerge, I remember that. And I don't think I ever met you when you were with Our Last Night, but that's cool.
Yeah. We didn't go out west. We only went out west once or twice, but that was the wild west, you know?
When I'm from Wisconsin, you would have met me in Wisconsin back then.
I don't even think we went there. I don't know. No. Well, remember the band Four Letter Lie? Of course you do. Kevin Scott.
That's the first band I toured with. You know that? So, in a van.
So yeah. So Our Last Night opened for Four Letter Lie. It was Our Last Night for, Therefore Tomorrow and Four Letter Lie. So maybe we did, because we definitely went to Minnesota.
Yeah, I did a photo shoot with Our Last Night in Wisconsin where I buried them in dirt when I was and they held warm. It was crazy. We did it, but they were still this guy named Redbeard out with them, which I don't know if you were with him.
Mm-mm.
Might have been right before you. I think Trevor was probably 12.
Yeah, I went out when he was 14.
Crazy how young he was when they started.
It's insane. My God. But yeah, carried on from there. So now, I don't know. Yada, yada, yada.
Well, I mean, you said at the beginning, what really interested me was you went from hardcore to kind of pop punk. And there's different things you learned along the way. I think if you want to go over the ones from hardcore, that's fine. But what did you learn? I mean, there and then for Warped Tour, like what did you pick up from those areas that you kind of kept with you?
I think that's when I started to see that it could be a career. And yeah. I saw like the headline bands, because we were opening all the tours, had this one guy that was kind of like the boss and like kind of the guy everybody went to answer questions. And then I saw him having like Excel open on his computer. And I thought like, man, who is this wizard? You know?
That's such a funny perspective. I got to write that down. That's great.
And then I don't know. And then I just kind of realized like, kind of fun, like traveling around the country with my best friends, and they come to me for answers, and there's a lot of responsibility, but we can have fun at the same time. And yeah, and then like Mayday Parade to me was like the first like big chance, and I was like, wow, I'm gonna be like tour managing.
Like you're doing it.
I'm doing it. There's a drum tech and a guitar tech. I'm like, this, if this isn't making it, I don't know what is, you know? And so I just kind of, I don't know, faked it till I made it, and just kind of picked up little on all the support tours. I always said that like, I would just look around and see what people were happy with and weren't happy with about their current tour manager, and look at their templates. Shout out Matt Flazik, Stay Sheet, that has made through the circuit.
He's the best.
Yeah. Like, you know, opening for All Time Low and those guys, and then onward to like Boys Like Girls and stuff like that, where they were doing big stuff for the time. And, you know, it was funny, after I became friendly with the Boys Like Girls guys, I ended up working with them on and off for like 4 years. And to me, they were like the biggest thing in pop punk at the time. They had a song with Taylor Swift, you know, like,
yeah,
it was just, you know, you were doing it, you know? So yeah, I just kind of took notes of everything going on and being like, I don't know why this is working out, but people seem to think I'm good at it. I don't know. And I'm just kind of faking it. And I like to count money. I don't know.
What do you think? I mean, you say faking it, but there's got to be something like about you, about your character, that maybe you didn't notice at the time, but in retrospect has become apparent. What do you think it is about your character and the way you learn that allowed you to be, you know, notice all these things and be open to all this and be okay with doing all this?
Well, I think there was a sense of like security that a lot of people feel around me, obviously with my kind of upbringing and a certain scene. Like,
yeah,
there wasn't much that intimidated me that I led on, you know? But, you know, then there was just this, I always wanted to work in the music business. I didn't know what capacity. Freshman year of high school, I said I was going to be a music producer, but I don't play an instrument. So then once I found out you needed to know music theory, I was like, I'm good. I'm all set, you know? And then like, you know, started getting involved with I just knew I wanted to be with music from a young, young age. And I didn't know what that looked like. So I was like, well, I guess this is it. I guess this is a cool little niche thing. I like to move around. You talk to a psychologist. I like to run away from things, but that's fine. You know, we'll unpack that on the next episode. But like
part two,
you know, part two. But yeah. And I don't know how it stuck or what happened, but I just kind of like took it. I looked at it as an opportunity, not just as a chance to hang with friends. And then as soon as I started taking on bands that I wasn't friends with, that's when I was like, I'm going to separate myself from, you know, the ones that are just hanging with friends to the ones that are making it a career, you know?
Yeah.
And then money started to play a part too, but you know, like,
yeah, your goals started to change. You started to become a full blown human, not just somebody leaving school in a van.
Yeah, exactly. It was a very natural thing, which I'm very thankful for. It truly did just snowball. And, it's crazy to think I'm doing my first stadium show at the end of this year as the headliner's tour manager. And it's like, I'm taking that moment to feel a lot of gratitude and like empathy and stuff and self-love. Cause it truly is like your cliche, you know, I may fail at it or I got to get to the end of the year, but you know, if I get there, it will be, when I get there, it will be a success story. You know what I mean? It will be somebody from Boston that literally came up with friends. And along the road, I've met a lot of people with similar stories. So it's really cool to like connect on that end, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like, you know, when you got the guitar tech and the other tech, and you're like, I'm really making it. I feel like you've probably had so many moments that feel just as good as it's going to feel, maybe on a different level to do the stadium.
Yeah.
But you've probably had so many of those in your career. Like, wow, I'm on a private jet. Does anything else stick out to you in your mind where you had that same feeling throughout you know, the past 10, 12 years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like with work, you mean, or just in general? Yeah.
Or, I mean, in general, too. It's all good.
Yeah. I mean, like with, there's still some stuff to this day, like that I'm like, okay, this is cool. You know, like I'm my job is to remain calm and even keeled and act like nothing's a big deal. But it's like, okay, I just shook Ashton Kutcher's hand. That's cool. You know, yeah. Or we had to make we had to go from a show to a show, and I had two private jets, not just one, you know, like that. I was like, I'm caravanning private jets right now. That's
you're like,
cool.
How many jets do you have? Oh, just one. Oh, okay.
Excuse me. Move over. We have two, but, no, it's still that rush that, you know, I'm sure other people on the show have talked about. It's like getting a band to stage and hearing the energy from the crowd. And it's like, my job is to secure that the artist can bring joy to people. So like, it shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't be anything but that at the end of the day. It's like, we're just trying to bring joy to people. So the people that are grumpy or, you know, angry people, like yellers, like, it's just like, we're not reinventing the wheel. We're literally just trying to put on a rock show, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, taking a step back and staying grounded during some of the moments that you would normally get shot out of a rocket is challenging, but it's worth it.
No, that's great. I mean, that's what makes a good tour manager. When you were talking about how you have this feeling of like safety around you, I've definitely toured with people like you and been around you. And I know that feeling of like, they're very calm, they're very collected, but at any moment they'll probably stand up and defend me in more ways than I could ever defend myself. And I think that's like a great thing to have as a tour manager. So
of course, yeah.
Thanks, Boston Hardcore.
Yeah, thanks for a lot of things.
So something we try to do on this podcast is like kind of go over people, not their origin story, but it's really interesting to me how people navigate from artist to artist. Cause you know, you're riffing off all these names and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but how did you before when you went Verso Emerge, Our Last Night, how did you keep getting up? Was it just meeting people on tour?
Originally it was. And then I remember I got hired by, you know, this one band and they told me I was no longer needed for a European run. And I just quit Verso Emerge for them. Oh, and God. So I was still on Warped Tour. Yeah. And so I was just like, oh, fuck. You can curse, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. You know, like, okay, well, I got to find work. So thankfully, like the production team at Warped Tour started asking amazing around people. And like Jake Paulson was still with Mayday Parade, miserable on the Ernie Ball stage. And, you know, it came out that they were looking for a new tour manager. So I went up to him. I was like, hey, I'm available. They're like, he's like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. And it literally like a few days later, I locked in like 4 months of touring and it was just by me, like going up to him, being like, I need a job, dude. What do you got? You know? And then, yeah, I ended up touring with them for like 2.5-3 years. So
I was going to say, I always feel like the hardest part to tell people, and I'm so happy that was your example, is to tell them like, you just have to get on one tour. Mm-hmm. And if you could just do, it doesn't even matter the size, just get out there and start meeting people. Cause it's so hard to do it from a couch or a computer.
Totally. I've spoken at a few schools now, which has been really, really rewarding. And like to engage with the kids that are really curious about this really niche job that nobody really understands what I do. And like, even my own family still doesn't quite understand what I do. It's been really cool, but that's like the main question that always gets asked is how do I get started? And it's just like, you say yes, like, you say yes, and you know, you're not going to make any money, like throw money out the window and look at the opportunity and money will come, you know, like, but it's such an experience based job and career touring as a whole, in my opinion, that like, you can't, no matter the progress in education with it, it's still experience based. So like, there's certain things that are personality based too, but like it takes getting, you know, jammed up on the side of the highway, you know, in Arizona and figuring out how you're going to make it to the next show and, you know, loading into a venue and all of a sudden the roof gets blown off by, you know, a hailstorm or something like that. And like,
has that happened?
Yeah. In Cincinnati, it was wild.
Wow.
but like, they're just like that. Those moments you can't teach. Those moments are solely just experience based. And so, yeah, I think it's just saying yes and taking whatever job that you hear about that's available, just taking it, and you're going to be miserable, but just take it, because it literally just takes you having a good work ethic and sometimes common sense. And chances are you can work for the rest for as long as you want to, you know?
Yeah. And I think the other thing that people can't rush, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this, is like, you really have to build like a stable network of people who will like sign off on you and vouch for you. Kind of like you're talking about on Warped Tour. It's like you went and got that job, but I'm sure that whoever you talked to asked other people, or other people's, maybe they didn't, but you know, they were probably like, hey, what about Mike? Is he good? Like, what was he doing before? Who knows him? Like, it's really hard to not know anybody and just get gigs.
I mean, and that kind of goes back to the experience side of it. Like I've come across a lot of people who tour who like don't have a core circle of people that also tour. And it's really a shame, because like there's a couple elements to that, is because A, they're your references, one. So from a professional standing, they are going to help you progress in your career. But two, you don't have a group that you can call and vent and to talk about that one, you know, situation that happened that just took energy out of you, and it was a tough day at work, and like the other people in that circle do the same thing as you in their own capacity, so they can relate and like tell you, be like, yeah, and then I had to go, you know, to the spa after for 2 hours after a day like that or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, sounding board. People that get it.
Just you need a circle and a group. And I am so thankful for the amount of friends I do have. Like, they are truly, you know, they have helped me through stuff on and off the road, but they are all people I met on the road, you know? And it's nice to know. I think you just had Andrew Weiss, for example. Like, Andrew Weiss was the guy I looked up to coming up. Like, he was my god. You know, there's old photos of me bowing down to a photo of him in the UK as a joke. So like, but now he is somebody I can text and call and like run ideas through, or, hey, I'm having a hard time with settlement. Is there any way to, you know, hey, what would you do in this situation? You know?
Yeah.
And to build that network with people that you looked up to is just like so rewarding. And it's nice to like feel that, man, like, he's answering my calls now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that do that, you know?
That's great. And man, Andrew Weiss is it's so nice when you have people in his position. And I would say, like, it didn't used to be that way, at least in my opinion, where they would be so helpful to the next generation or people coming up, because it is easy to kind of dismiss him and be like, oh, he's like an old road dog. Like, he'll probably kill me if I ask him questions, but he's the polar opposite. He's so and kind and helpful. And I'm glad that he was able to help you out and must've done a good job, because you're crushing. You're doing good.
Yeah. Staying afloat, you know?
All right. So you've toured. Eventually you went from Mayday. Did you go from Mayday to Dylan? Is that what happened?
No, I went from Mayday to, after Mayday, I tour managed the AP tour. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
So Lisa Brownlee couldn't do it 1 year, so they hired me to oversee the whole tour. So that was like my first kind of role that I didn't work for a band.
Okay.
I just tour managed the tour. And then shortly after that, I decided I had been on tour for about 6 years straight with like no breaks. And I was like, okay, I'm done touring. I'm going to go work at Lululemon and like do CrossFit. So
I got Lululemon.
Hey, the best. So then after, I was like, oh, wait a second. I have based my entire life off of touring income. This doesn't make sense, you know? So I eventually went back out with this small pop group that only lasted a couple months. And then my friend Sheep, who you remember.
You know, I'm talking to Sheep today after this call, right?
Are you?
I'm calling him first. Yeah, that's so random. Man, everybody I've talked to today is just friends.
He called me. He was like, hey, I can't do this tour because I'm out with this band. Can you go tour manage the Used? And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that was my favorite band in seventh grade. So I was like,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I went, told the band that was sitting in the front lounge, guys, I'm out. And I flew out of Seattle. We were in Seattle that day. I just left.
You left to go with the, because you're with that small band.
Yeah. And so then we did Warped Tour again. And then, did a little club tour with them. And then that's when I took over for Rob Highcroft. I took over You Me at Six for about a year. And I moved over to the UK and I was living over there.
Oh my God. You've done so much.
It's funny, because like I don't think about it like that anymore. I don't think I have a lot of names on my resume, you know?
Now we're going through it. We're ticking off the boxes here. I think we're at 10.
Oh, geez.
And it's not because you were fired.
Yeah, no. I just kind of rolled into one by one. I don't know if I've officially been fired from anybody, thankfully.
You fired yourself from that small band, it sounds like. You just kind of that was pretty fast.
Myself. Yeah. But yeah, and then from there, something happened with our US leg of the tour. And so they kind of took some time off and I got a call about some very small country act down in Nashville in 2014. And I moved down here, worked for this country band for, I don't know, 3 months again. And it was not the best fit, not the best personality fit. And
what's that mean? When you say it's not the best personality fit, like, what's that take? Because that's important. And I don't know what it means.
I think it's more so like, you have a style, you've developed a style, you continuously work on your style of work that works for some people. But the thing that you can't control are people's personalities, you know?
Yeah, that's just always going to be that way.
It's just like if you meet somebody and you're like, man, I don't really like this person, you know? Like, yeah. And there's no real reason. You're just like, yeah, I'm just, it doesn't vibe, you know?
Yes.
Kind of dealt with that. And then a friend of mine recommended me for Dylan and I just took it. And yeah, worked with Dylan for 5.5 years. So
that's amazing. Good job. That's a long career.
That was a lot.
That's a long time.
Yeah, we did about 250 shows a year. So it was a lot.
That's 1,250 shows. 12,000.
Maybe.
No, 1,250 shows.
The busy years were about 250.
It's still a lot of shows. All right, only 1,000.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a lot. But he was the best. He is the best. He's still a dear friend of mine. And then, you know, I fast forward and at Coachella, actually, I'd been with Dylan for 5.5 years and I got a call randomly saying someone passed my name in for this opportunity with this country star and country singer. And, you know, I thought on it and was like, all right, it's time to take it and move on.
What's it like? Like, before we talk about you acquiring that next job, what's it like going from somebody who obviously you care about and you're still friends with, Dylan, and taking another job where, you know, the contributing factors are probably mostly, I'm going to assume, you know, it's financially more and the schedule is more what you want to do. But how do you kind of end that relationship with the artist on a good note?
Yeah, it's tough. It's for me, I have a different outlook on money. And for me, I have this checklist. I have this checklist of my career and my bucket list, my career bucket list. And so I look at the opportunities as like, can I progress in my career by taking this, you know?
Okay.
Is like a financial, like I can, I big picture, I kind of break it down and also financial gains important, but at a certain point, you know, you can do this for a long time and sometimes you just are tired, you know, you're tired of, it does get, people don't really know this side of it. It gets very repetitive after a while, you know?
250 shows a year. I can't imagine they're all different.
You can only, yeah, exactly. You can only do so many nightclubs, so many EDCs. You can only do it so many times until it's like, you know what? I'm just not challenged. And so that's, I don't just have a hard time with complacency. And so, yeah. And so I, you know, look at the opportunity as a whole and, you know, I had it on the back of my mind for a little while, but I was just kind of thankful to have such a great job traveling the world with one of my best friends at the time who grew to be one of my best friends, you know? And so it was like, I just constantly outweighed the pros and the cons. And even, you know, to this day, it's just the same thing. You know, I've been very, very thankful to not have to, this sounds super cocky, but I really don't mean it that way. But like, I've been very thankful to not have to seek employment for a long time. And, but it does, it's almost equally as hard by having a great situation and making the choice of like, okay, like I have to think about my life, my overheads, my quality of life, will I be fired? Will they like me? You know, like, I think I'm a Jewish kid from Boston. So it's ingrained in me that I'm guilt, that I have a lot of guilt. So like, I just like, you know, I overthink every angle, you know, it's just never the long end of it. It's never easy, especially when there's a great relationship and it's not a personal move. It's just solely a business move because it's such a personal job.
Yeah, no, that's very well put. And that's why I wanted to ask, because, you know, I think it's like how you leave those jobs is so important because, I mean, every job you've talked about, you're getting a recommendation for somebody that you've worked with somewhere. And if you burn a bridge somehow, you're not going to get those recommendations anymore because people don't want to recommend people who are going to peace out incorrectly.
Showbiz is brutal. And at the end of the day, it's brutal. But I've always chosen diplomacy and taken the high road as much as the Boston hardcore kid in me.
Yeah.
Or the Boston punk that used to wear anarchy signs and have a mohawk. Like as much as that side wants to come out, like I just have to go for a walk or, you know, call a friend to talk me off the ledge in the sense of like, I'm going to tell them exactly how I feel, you know? And for that reason though, just to kind of reconfirm that statement is it's a small business, no matter the genre, no matter the artist, no matter the crew, like, you know, it is a very reputation heavy business.
Agreed. All right. So your reputation got you this gig that you got a call for at Coachella, and the gig was with Thomas Rhett, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So who hires you? Like, how does it work? Like, what's the hiring process like? That's a big artist. You know, it's a lot of trust. Like, what's that process like?
This one, everybody has their own way of doing business, which I kind of love about the industry as a whole. You know, one day I'll talk to the production manager, or the other day I'll talk to the business manager. Another time I'll talk to the manager.
Yeah.
It's just like whomever calls me that day, really, you know, and they had been looking for quite a while. They tried out a couple people. It just wasn't working. So I ended up speaking to the production manager, and at the same time, they called my best friend, Britton Billick, to ask if he wanted the job. And I ended up having to call Britton and be like, can you please not take this job? Like, I kind of want this one. He's like, well, you know, there's going to be many a times we're going to be competitive with each other. And I was like, I don't want this to be the time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. And then he called them back and said, listen, you're speaking to my best friend. Like, go. I have a job. Thank you very much. You know, and I still kiss his feet for that. But
wow, good on him. That's hard to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's a great camp and it's a big opportunity. And that, again, going back to that checklist and that bucket list, you know, like I wanted that next level. I wanted that kind of back to the traditional side of touring. I wanted that traditional side of touring again, because I was so accustomed to EDM style touring. And one of my other really close, one of my best friends from Vegas, his name's Phil. He goes, so you're telling me you're going to give up flying in private jets all around the world with your best friends to go schlep around the country in semi trucks and tour buses? And I was like, doesn't that sound great? Like, what do you mean? Like, what are you looking at me? Like, I'm crazy, you know? Yeah. And I just wanted, like, I really fell in love with the ecosystem of traditional touring, of like getting there in the morning and the silence and the beauty of like an empty venue and walking in and creating an entire city, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really nerdy, but I fell in love with it.
Dude, I want to let you keep going, but you have so many quotes that are so good. Like, I keep writing them down, but I'm just like, to capture the feelings of these concerts, like, it's hard to explain to somebody, like, no, you don't get it. Waking up on a bus to the smell of coffee, it's so nice. And then you just explain, like, walking into it. It's just, you did such a good job romanticizing it on a level that I feel so, like, deeply. And it was good.
There is a level of romance to it. And like, again, I don't fucking know why. Like, it just kind of happened. Like, and I think through, honestly, everything plays a part. Everything is a stepping stone. And like, through the chaos of punk and hardcore shows, I fell in love with chaos. And then, and in the midst chaos, I feel the most calm sometimes. So it's like, why not? Why would I not be a tour manager then? You know, the tour bus is on fire. People are sleeping still. The bus drivers passed out because of smoke inhalation. You know, like, I was just crazy
that
mayhem.
And I'm
just, I mean, buses have caught fire before, but but I did have a bus driver have a heart attack on at a truck stop once. That was pretty wild. I drove the bus like 12 miles down the road. That was kind of fun.
The wheel.
Yeah, that was wild. But that said, I don't know. I just always was able to like kind of take a step back and just like be like, all right, solutions. Let's find solutions.
All right. Well, I like a lot of good points. Sorry. If I ever stall, it's because I'm taking it all in. And I'm like, now where was I going next? All right. So, I mean, so you get this job, this job offer. Luckily, Britton said, nope, no go for me. I don't know who would win that fight. We'd have to put you guys like up toe to toe.
He would win because he would hit me with the, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. And I can't beat that. He's perfected that.
Oh, you know? He pull at you. All right, I got you. So after, I mean, you want the job, what are the different factors you take into consideration before taking said job, other than the fact that, you know, you like to travel that way?
I don't think there's one set. I think it's evolving and it's constantly evolving, because like each job has presented its own learning things, you know, learn from, you know?
Well, I mean, specifically to this Thomas Rhett gig, because we're, you know what I mean? Like, for that one in particular, is there anything?
I definitely think it was partially ego driven too, like working with a really big name like that, a commercially successful name. I didn't really know much about him or his story or his family. So after some Google searches and stuff like that, I was like, oh wow, he's a really great guy. And his family story is really beautiful. And then calling some colleagues that were in the country scene that I had never worked in, like they were like, oh, that's the ticket.
Yeah. It's like a good artist to work for. They signed off.
And it's like a good name to represent. And like, you know, and so that played a huge part in it. And then, you know, the job scope was originally like, hey, you're going to come in and just be the 30,000 foot view role. We just need somebody to give us that 30,000 foot view role to keep us on the road. And I was like, okay, cool. I like that. So it wasn't as much hands-on to do work, but it was more so fielding questions and concerns and consulting to maintain, you know, kind of some order, you know?
That makes sense. Is there a name for that? Is that tour director? Or is that not the right name?
It is, but like my title was tour manager, you know?
Okay.
But like, it's funny because like, it's very much similar to a tour director role, even though it has a tour manager title, because we had road managers for the band. We had road managers for him. The production manager and production coordinator handled the crew, but it was all to a combination of all of us's master plan that I would oversee, you know?
Okay.
And then I would just work on the infrastructure and the operational side to make sure it's like financially viable and we're making smart spends, not just spending, you know? And I was able to develop some new practices with spendings that I think are really, that have proved to be really helpful.
And I think so, like in a way, like the role of tour manager kind of just changed so much as you went to such big venues. Like when you're small, it just means you do everything that needs to be done.
Everything.
But now when you're bigger, it's like, okay, you do this very finite thing, but it's a big tour, so it matters a whole lot.
Yeah, it's like that classic case of like when you build a building and it's 1 inch off, by the time the building's done, it's 16 feet off.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
It's like it has that sort of repercussions. If you have 150 people on the crew and you by accidentally spend $150 per person.
Yeah.
Times that by 150 people, and before you know it, you have a shitload of money, you know, just over by accidentally spent, you know?
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah. So like, it's just like kind of that idea, but you can utilize, you know, the ideas of micromanagement and macro management is like something I've kind of taken to and tried to work with and seeing how to productively macro, like look at things at a macro level and focus more on averages and medians, not so much on the highs and the lows, you know?
Gotcha. Look at the big picture, not on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly.
That makes sense. So what's like, now that you've gone from touring in Warped Tour World, touring with DJs, touring on, you know, hardcore, and you come to country, like often I hear country referred to as weekend warriors. Can you explain to me like maybe not dynamic, but how does country touring work? Like maybe not specifically with Thomas Rhett, but just in general.
Yeah. Weekend warrior just means you only do shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You're home Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then usually leaving Wednesday night.
Okay.
You're home predominantly 3 to 4 days a week. And then you do 3 shows a week. And the way I think I was told that the fan base, you know, country music is usually, you know, catered to a blue collar fan base. So they can't necessarily take off work unlike some of the like rock and pop groups.
Gotcha.
Who can, you know, and that's just one person explained it to me and it made a lot of sense. So hopefully it's true or I just made that up. But like,
it's in the podcast. It's true now.
Yeah, exactly. It's on paper. So, but yeah, so we can worry. So instead of taking out leases and stuff and living on a bus for 3 months straight, you're spreading out the 3 months of shows over the course of a year.
Okay. Just staggering it.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, you go out and come back and you go out and come back. It's just, I don't quite understand it still, but it's really, it's nice to once you get used to. Yeah. It's just like, I didn't question it. I was just like, great. So I can be home.
Is it necessary to live in Nashville to do this type of touring? Like, is that because like most people start from there with their bus or how does it work?
At one point, I think the Nashville scene as a whole, and I want to say I've been a part of that. I happen to be from Nashville, but I am not a Nashville tour manager. I'm not a country tour manager. I come from, you know, years of other stuff. So that dynamic has changed. And at a certain point, like certain talent pools cap out or dry up and you have to look elsewhere. And, you know, with Thomas's, we have Ariana Grande's former like monitor engineer. We borrowed somebody, I kind of took them, 21 Pilots keyboard tech, you know, and like we have a lot of guys that have done a lot of different things that aren't country because they do a great job. So we look at the additional costs of having to fly them in and out every week and everything like that as like what's going to create the most redundant, safe, well-executed show every single night. And it's not necessarily dealing with like Cotton Eye Joe down the road who used to guitar tech for Dwight Yoakam. You know what I mean? Like that's just like, it's just like, I think it's changed and you're starting to see a lot of people, especially on the tour managerial side, coming in from elsewhere to operate these tours because it, even the touring itself has gone to such a pop level that it's not just going and doing the county fairs anymore. You're doing all the A-level arenas, the MSGs and the Staples Centers and stuff like that, you know? So
just because country is more popular and is a pop genre in a way now because it's
exactly.
Big. And what's it like for you, like now that you've toured there for a few years, like what has your experience been just working in country? I guess I'm trying to get at like, what really sets it apart other than the time frame from other touring gigs, or is it pretty much exactly the same?
I think the best thing that I did for myself not knowing was coming from EDM into country because they're such niche genres and they have their, and so in EDM, I learned that they just have their own way of doing things because when I got hired by a DJ, I was bringing a rock style of touring into the DJ life. And I was just seeing that, like I was communicating with these people and they were looking at me like I was crazy because I was like asking for such normal stuff, but they
have an
never
example.
Heard of
I want to know. I know it's hard to pull things out sometimes. Somebody's like, give me an example of that thing. But,
I think the easiest thing is like, hey, you can't tell me, don't worry, bro. I got you on my advance. Like I need you to confirm my rider I just sent and initial it and sign it and confirm X, Y, and Z, not, oh, bro, we do this all the time. The nightclub's going to be popping. It's going to be lit, you know? Like, and I'm just like, I'm sorry, that's not a contractual like agreement. Like, I don't know what that, like, stop.
Like,
you know?
It's not business email language even at all.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't even have TikTok. I don't know. Like, you know, but yeah, just like the professionalism was really tough. And that even that had changed because a lot more people started bringing rock and pop tour managers into EDM, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like country is its own world. Like they do things like the Weekend Warrior style touring, and, you know, certain things like that, the award shows, like you just have like all these like little niche things that you kind of just got to be like, oh, that's how we do it here now. You know, I think you have to be willing to be a chameleon in some sense of like, you have to adapt with your surroundings with two niche markets, you know?
Yeah.
They don't do well with like really aggressive personalities, you know, like, cause they're all Southern and sensitive, you know,
family oriented, like
family oriented, like good morals, you know, most of the time, but like, yeah, just stuff like that. You know, it's just, you just got to change your approach a lot. And I think that goes with any artist, but you have to change your approach as a whole a little more in country, you know?
So where do you kind of draw the line if it's like, okay, how do you know if it's something you need to morph and, you know, work with? And if it's like, okay, we have different personalities, like where do you draw that line?
I think if you get a chance to meet the person before you're hired, that's kind of a country thing I found out. Like you kind of actually have an interview where,
oh, really?
Sometimes in rock and then, you know, I mean, even your position and as like content, like you just kind of show up to the first day, you know, and you're like,
what up?
How's it going? You know, here I am, you know, there's that aspect. So you can kind of catch a vibe that way. Or same thing. Like I got hired for Thomas and I flew to the first day of tour in Montreal. I knew nobody. They just hired me because they needed somebody. And I fit, I guess I ticked a couple boxes and I just showed up and it was able to stick and it worked out really well. You know, there is that aspect of it too, but yeah, I think that just takes time, you know,
okay. Experience
and experience and self-awareness and like stuff like that to kind of be aware of your surroundings and reading people and seeing what's working, what's not, you know?
Yeah, that's great. So you're with Thomas for a long time. I mean, 3 years, but it was like during COVID, but then again with the country
year.
Kind of, yeah. What'd you say?
It's a dog year. One COVID year is 7 years. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It throws off all my timelines, man. COVID has been like, I'm like, it was 1 year. Well, it was 3 years, but it was 1 year. It's like, kind of yeah. hard to do it. It's COVID messed yeah. it all up.
Oh, yeah.
But now that you've been there for a few years, like, what do you like about it? Are you getting to the place at all yet where you were with DJs?
On a personal level, for sure. You know, Thomas and his family I've grown really close with and I love very dearly. And, you know, I've tried to do the best for them as I could, you know, and they're very appreciative and have welcomed me into their own family. And that whole family factor has played a huge part with this camp. Then on the work side, it's really nice and rewarding to see the state of which the crew and the tour was at when I first got hired to now. Yeah. And to like take a step back to that 30,000 foot view, which you like seem to get lost in sometimes because you come back to ground too much. Like you take a step back and you're like, man, this is bulletproof, you know, like yeah. to the point where like, I don't think I need to be here. You know, like yeah. I can miss a week and they will be perfectly executed.
You did your job too well. You yeah. invalidated yourself.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I just fired myself again, you know? So, yeah, I think it. And so it's really cool to see my systems that I just said, like, let's just do it this way. You know, yeah. they didn't know in my head. I was like, this is either going to go well or it's going to go awful. But, you know, I just kind of stayed the course and said, no, this is how we're going to do things. Look at things very like, I don't know. Don't make it rocket science.
You really are a consultant on that job. It was yeah. a consulting gig.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, that's why I would kind of like to go and consult when my time on tour is over, you know, if that time ever comes.
Dude, my favorite book is a consulting book. It's so it? Good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always forget the name of it, which is a weird thing to say when it's my favorite book, but it's like this dude who was a consultant for his whole life. And he just talks about all the lessons he learned and examples of how he applied all these rules. And it's so funny and it's that's so awesome. Good. Yeah. You can probably, I'll find it for you and send it to you afterwards. I don't know how many people take me up on the books I like category, but you know, maybe if it's consulting and you really like it, you will.
I'm really bad at reading, so I'll listen to the audiobook. All right.
Oh, that's probably a great audiobook. All right. So you mentioned earlier that you have a stadium show coming up, which mm-hmm. we kind of brushed over, my own fault, but that's pretty cool. I mean, what's your yeah. role in this show? And I don't know. I just want to hear about it.
It's funny. Like I, you put all these, like we talked about romanticizing you like yeah. you romanticize over that Ed Sheeran show, you know what I yeah, mean? Yeah. Like where you just like realize that it's just another night at work, but there's more people there and there's bigger structures and there's more stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So
more chaos, which is right down
more
here.
More chaos.
That's what you
exactly.
like. Yeah,
so
we're here.
You know, I look forward to feeling the energy of that many people, you know, like you feel it and you hear the crowds and like, and it's just something that like, I'll probably during the set go up to the 300 level, like far back row and just like take a seat next to some like, you know, Cotton Eye Joe boy and just like give him a nod. Cause they'll be like, what are you doing here? You know?
Wait, how many people is it? Like, what is a stadium? What's the capacity?
I mean, if you're like a baseball stadium is around 35 to 45. And then, you know, football stadiums go anywhere from like, you know, 85 to or 65 to 100, you know, like the SEC stadiums and stuff like that.
And what does it matter? Like, it depends on where they put the stage and where they allow people to sit. Does that like change?
Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, you can't sell a ticket that, you know, people can't see the performance, you know? So if you yeah. have a, you know, an 80 foot structure in the way, you can't really sell a ticket behind the stage.
That makes sense.
Or you could. But I mean, and on them if they want to buy it.
It'd probably work in South America. People there like just like want to be there and they're like on a whole nother level, man.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate their level of love for music.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's going to be a cool feeling.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, man. Well, you should take a picture and send it to me. I'm like reminiscing about how cool it'll feel to sit in the same. Definitely take a picture and be like, I want to see that photo of you back.
I mean,
there
it won't be as great of quality as your photo. So that's kind of, when a photographer asks me to send them a photo, I can say like shot on iPhone or something, you know,
it's maybe okay. I got nervous when I was sending my Zoom invite. So, you know, it's like,
cool. All right. Where are you even then? I'll send you even? A photo.
Well, I mean, that pretty much sums up most of my questions I had for you. I just kind of wanted to understand what you've done and kind of how country is. And that was a really good brief overview. Is there anything else that you feel people need to know? And it's okay if there isn't, but you know, about country at all.
Oh, about country?
I mean, or in general. I mean, just in general about touring. Like, I'm just here. It's cool you've talked to schools. So I'm sure you have some things that you make sure you hit when you talk to the schools.
Yeah. I mean, my whole thing is opportunity. Like, if you're starting out, you got to take every opportunity, even if it feels awful and you know that it's probably not a good decision. But like, you just have to take it, you know, like just deal with it. And I don't know. And never let, never really let, like, I always approach things not from a financial perspective.
Okay.
You know, actually, some of my worst jobs have been based off of the ones I accepted for just money, you know?
Yeah.
So if whatever opportunity you do take, although it may not feel right, care about the job that you're assigned. And if you care, that's going to speak louder than any other situation that you're faced with, because people are going to notice that you care about your work, no matter what the duty is, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And just like own it. I'm very big on ownership. Just own whatever you're doing, you know?
It is a, sorry, keep going.
No, I think that's it. Like, I think that's really what I always tell like these college kids is just like, how do you start? I don't know. Call the venue, go be a security guard in the barricade and get spit on, or, you know, like go
a runner.
Yeah. Go be a runner. Honestly, runners, my friend, Angie Warner, who does Post Malone and BTS, and she's become a very dear friend of mine. She used to be a runner and she's done Rolling Stones, Imagine Dragons, BTS, Post Malone. Like, you can't get bigger than Angie Warner. Like, she's just a boss, you know? And she was a runner.
Tag her in. Can we tag her into the podcast? Got the craziest. She's got the, that's a crazy resume. I love that she started as a runner too.
Yeah. I'll send you her contact. She's awesome. And she's like, she's down to do it. She spoke at the same, we both spoke at Berkeley. So like we definitely, she's awesome. She's willing to talk.
Yeah. And it's like, anytime I can get somebody who's a woman on here is like, it's great because like we need another more of thing. That.
She's an absolute boss and she is a woman and I have nothing but the utmost respect for her because she has had to work twice, if not three times, four times harder than me. And it's just, it's something that hopefully is changing as time goes, but like, I just have such respect for women in touring because it is a predominantly male, like male dominant, you know, career. But yeah, she's just badass. She's just a boss.
Well, I'm excited to hopefully meet her. And if she doesn't do the podcast, I'd just love to say hey, because that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. We do have one question we ask everybody is shower shoes or no shower shoes? What's your vibe on the road?
Build up your immunity. Don't go shower shoes.
There we go. Nope. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you
so much for your time, Mike. I appreciate it so much, man.
Of course, man. Good to see you. It's been a long time. We'll see each other soon.
We'll see each other in real life eventually. I don't know when, but whenever it happens, I'm excited and it's going to be good.
Absolutely, man. Looking forward to it.
All right. I don't get to talk to you guys so much about what I've been up to, which I'm not that like conceited. I don't need you to know what I've been up to, but I like to talk about it when it pertains to the journey we're on together through this podcast. And about 2 weeks ago, I hired a lady that I met through a mutual friend. Her name's Liz. She's helping me write my proposal, my query for my book. So I did write most of the book, but I'm deciding to take a step back and kind of go through these motions, these formalities to pitch it. So how it works is you write a query and a proposal. It ends up being about 40-ish pages of a book to 50. It ends up being about 30,000 words. And what it consists of is two sample chapters, the intro to your book, a layout of everything that's going to be in your book and kind of, you know, describing it. And then your plan for the book. Like, why is this book needed? Who's going to read it? Like, why should we pick you? And what you do is you take that proposal and you kind of shop it around to literary agents. And these literary agents say, okay, I like what you're doing. I vibe with it. We're on the same page. And they take that proposal and query or maybe do some other things. I'm still learning. And they go to publishers. And what happens from there is the publisher says, oh, we like your book in theory. We don't like your book. I guess that's an outcome. We're going to give you X amount of money. Go write it next in a year and then bring it back to us and we'll sell it. So I'm at the beginning stages of that, but I wrote it. It's moving along in a much more solid path than I had been doing it before. And I really like that. It's a lot more formal, I guess you could say. So these last few weeks, I kind of really just focused on writing, and I ended up writing about 24,000-ish words that are pretty good. Although my mom went through and edited it, and a bunch of my friends, I have a lot of my peers look through it, and I've got a lot of work to do. Grammarly cannot save me. But if what I want to tell you guys, if you're still listening, you're probably an avid listener, because if you're otherwise, you probably wouldn't still be listening. But if you have any quotes that really stuck out to you from the podcast, maybe it's from an episode 40 episodes ago, whatever it is, send them my way on the Discord. And if you're not on our Discord, you're not a patron, that's fine. Message them to me, Instagram, wherever. Just reach out. I just want to know like what your favorite guest was and why, and some quotes from them, because I'm trying to pull quotes for the book. And I think it's going to come down to I will just have to spend a week listening to my own podcast or start doing that soon, because it's going to take a while, but I need to start going through and finding quotes. But if you can help me, let me know. I want to put them in the book. If you have anything you think we're missing on here, let me know. Somebody said they wanted more artists. We'll get more artists. Just let me know. I'm all ears. All right. Talk to you later, guys. I'll see you next week.